You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. It's Friday, time for our reporter roundtable. This is when we get you up to date on all the news that made headlines around our region this week. Joining us live in studio today, Betsy Russell with Idaho Press, Mike Sharp with KIVI 6 on your side, Kevin Richard with Idaho Ed News, and Heath Drusen is popping in from Boise State Public Radio News. Welcome. Happy Friday.
Oh, yeah.
Hello.
So, Heath, we're starting with you. Yesterday, we had you on Idaho Matters to talk about your attempt to talk with Senator Jim Risch about a question concerning President Trump's public request for China to investigate his political rival's family. Now, anyone who missed that segment can go back and listen on our website, BoiseStatePublicRadio.org. But just to quickly recap, Senator Risch was at an event in Nampa on Wednesday, and you covered this, Heath, which included time for press to ask questions at the end of this event. So we want to listen back to that tape for those of you who might have missed this exchange.
As the chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, do you think it's appropriate that the president asks a hostile foreign power like China?
I'm not going to do an interview on that. Go ahead on
investigate.
Let's talk about business today.
I think that's a fair question to ask, Senator.
Do you want to do an interview on the business or not?
Yes, I'd like to get to that, but first I have that question.
I'm not going there. If you want to do an interview with me on the business center, please do so.
Senator, with all due respect, though, you are the chairman.
You. Thank you, though.
Okay.
Thank you all.
Thank you,
good Senator. To see you.
Thank you.
Don't do that again.
I just asked a fair question, Senator.
He told you the ground rules?
I did not agree to any ground rules, sir.
So since then, Senator Risch has released a statement, in part saying that you, quote, hounded him.
Yeah, I probably won't be getting a Christmas card this year. But he said hounded. I would just say I was asking a question and just trying to get an answer. When he started walking away, that was it. I mean, there was really no hounding. I did repeatedly ask the question. I thought it was an important one. He decided not to answer it and to end the interview, and then that was that.
And also within that statement, he did mention that he makes himself available to media and to Idaho media. And Betsy, in this statement, he said he recently hosted two reporters back in D.C. You happen to be one of those reporters.
I was. I went back to D.C. for a week-long reporting trip, and during the course of that, I spent an entire very long day shadowing Senator Risch, and then also interviewed him again the next day and followed him to some of his obligations back there, including as chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee, for a major story that the Idaho Press just published last week. And one thing that really came out during that reporting that I did back there was his reluctance or really refusal to ever talk publicly in any way that would criticize President Trump, and how he has made waves with that reluctance or that refusal, particularly with Democrats and pundits and the press, because the foreign relations chairman, typically, including Senator Bob Corker, his immediate predecessor, was very outspoken in his criticism of President Trump's moves on foreign policy.
And, you know, within that statement, he also mentioned that the staff has gone out to meet other reporters over the last few months, has gone to newspapers, television stations, radio stations to put themselves out there. And to our knowledge, we know that they did not come to Channel 6. I don't believe they've come to our station. But Betsy,
oh, yeah,
they met with you.
I've met with them more than once, actually. And his staff has been actually very good to work with.
And, you know, to be the devil's advocate, and Heath, and we talked about this briefly yesterday, is this idea that is it fair of journalists to ask questions that don't pertain to the event that you are covering?
Absolutely. If you're a senator, you need to be ready to answer the questions of the day, the political questions of the day. If you're the chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, which is an extremely important, powerful position, yeah, I think you need to be ready to answer questions that pertain to that job, especially right now. I mean, the biggest political question of the day is the impeachment inquiry and the controversies surrounding the president, and Senator Risch is in the middle of that. So, yeah, I do think that's important. Again, I would have been happy to also talk about the event. In fact, I was planning on it. It was, you know, as part of my questioning. But as reporters, we can't let politicians pick and choose the questions that they're willing to address.
And Betsy, this isn't the first time he's gotten kind of testy with media. In fact, talk to us about this time with the Andrus naming.
Sure. Senator Risch has something of a history of behaving in this manner with reporters. And when national reporters approached him after he held up a federal budget deal past midnight over his objection to including a clause renaming the White Clouds Wilderness in Idaho after Cecil Andrus, he not only refused to comment, he said loudly to a group of national reporters who duly reported it, "No, do you have a problem with my English? I said no comment." He was very, very testy. And this is not really how most politicians behave with the media. It stands out.
And even on this program, and he has said before that if he has issue with the president, he'll do it behind closed doors. And it almost closes the door to any type of questioning. And in fact, I mean, that's kind of what happened yesterday, Heath.
Yeah, I mean, he did shut down the questioning. What was interesting was there was a pretty big response to it, both Idaho and regular Idahoans, and a media response. And in response to that flap, he actually did finally release a statement on impeachment and kind of made some news. And so, you know, he released the statement and what was very notable about it, it didn't say a whole lot, but what was notable about it was he's a reliable Trump ally, and he actually did not defend the president in the statement. He really kind of took a wait-and-see approach.
I want to thank you for coming in, Heath. We're going to get to some other issues right now that have also made headlines this week. Kevin, get us up to date on first-term legislator Chad Christensen from Ammon, because this is has to do with, once again, maybe defunding higher education.
Right. So Chad Christensen, first-term legislator from Ammon, is the latest lawmaker to broach the idea of defunding Boise State University, which is a complicated matter, and we can get into the wonky politics of how you would defund a university as opposed to a university system. But the crux of the debate centers on gender-neutral restrooms on the campus. Christensen posted a photo on his Facebook page of the outside of a gender-neutral restroom and complained that the restroom contained tampons and pads, and that he was surprised, taken aback, that taxpayer dollars go towards supplying tampons and pads. The reaction on social media was vocal, and it was split. I mean, there were commenters on his Facebook page saying, yes, it's time to defund Boise State. You're right. They're out of control liberalism. It's time. But you had a lot of commenters saying, lampooning Christensen for bringing up the issue of tampons. Some have mailed him tampons and pads. Twitter, you saw the hashtag pads for Mad Chad take off on social media. So it became a lot about feminine hygiene products that he now says, Christensen, that he will take everything that he has received in the mail from his detractors and he will donate it to local shelters. There's a bigger issue here, obviously, and the issue of defunding a university or challenging the funding of a university. I think we're heading into a different area politically, and Betsy, you know, you've been watching this a long time. This feels different. It feels like this isn't just a debate about how much can we afford to put into higher education, how much can we afford to put into scholarships for students. This feels like a values debate. It feels like a morals debate. It feels a lot more pitched and a lot more emotional. I don't know if it's going to get anywhere because Christensen, he's a first-term legislator. He's not on the budget committee. He's not on the House Education Committee. A lot like Tammy Nichols from Middleton, who broached the idea of defunding. So you don't necessarily have influential, well-positioned, experienced legislators leading this charge, but you do have this sort of cadre of very conservative legislators who are very upset, particularly at Boise State, and seem to have a very emotional distaste right now for the new president, Marlene Trump, who at the same time is generating a lot of goodwill in the community. I mean, she has kind of, you know, she's kind of rock star status on campus, but within the state house and with some House conservatives, she is definitely generating a lot of backlash.
I think it's worth mentioning that this kind of started with the letter signed by 28 House Republicans to President Trump, objecting to a newsletter that her predecessor had sent out about diversity and inclusion programs. And it turned out that many of the claims of that letter were incorrect, and many of the things they were talking about weren't even funded by the state budget. And since then, a number of legislators, many of them conservative Republicans, have met with President Trump and found her interesting and engaging and expressed interest in talking to her further. There are still a few out there who, when I spoke with House Majority Leader Mike Moyle about this, he said that he's heard of some people who want to, quote, whack the higher ed budget over this. This has nothing to do with funding levels. This really has nothing to do with the state budget. This is a philosophical thing that they're expressing, that they don't like the way our society is going and higher education is going, and therefore they're going to punish it in the way that they can as legislators, which they figure must be through the state budget. In general, these are freshman legislators who are kind of having their first say on the big state stage. As Kevin said, it seems very unlikely to actually have any real effect on the budget for higher education. But I do think it will generate a lot of light and heat, and it will be one of those minor themes that's percolating as our legislative session kicks off in January with a whole lot of serious stuff on the plate.
Something I found interesting is the development that in the next few weeks there's going to be an actual debate between Representative Matt Erpelding, Sheree Buckner-Webb, Senator Sheree Buckner-Webb, as well as Representative Ehart, who you mentioned, who penned that letter, and Representative Nichols. And the interesting thing about that is this debate, which has been set up, I think, if I remember correctly, the Idaho Freedom Foundation is helping spearhead that. They're involved in some way, possibly?
I'm not sure, but the forum that you're mentioning, and I think it's really kind of interesting, and maybe it's a silver lining in all of this debate, the campus Republicans and the Young Democrats on Boise State campus came together to put together this panel. So it's a bipartisan effort to put together a panel with a bipartisan cadre of legislators. I mean, it is kind of interesting to see students who are most directly affected.
But the power dynamic I find very interesting, that it's the leadership on the Democratic side and two very young legislators, or young in their experience, in the Idaho legislature.
Sure.
And it hasn't been that common in my time covering the state legislature where you know, it's not that leadership allows them to speak, but you know, that two people with such little experience are given that opportunity to be the vocal or be the speakers for the majority.
What's interesting, though, is we have had Boise State students on our program when this letter was released. And both, you know, whether students are Democrats or Republicans, their big push was, why don't you talk to the students? Why don't you talk to us? We are the ones who are affected by this. So to see, though, that these students are spearheading this, I think also says something, because it goes back to what you said, Betsy, about this being, you know, people may not like the way society is going, but maybe we should talk to the students who are most directly affected by the budget.
I think it's also very consistent with President Trump's message, which has been that she wants more dialogue. She wants to meet with more legislators. She wants there to be more dialogue about all these issues and about what the university does and what its role is in society. And in fact, Representative Ehart, who's one of those who will take part in the forum and who was the author of that letter, is among the legislators who have met with Dr. Trump and was very impressed by her.
Mike, Boise City Council Forum happened recently, mm-hmm. and transportation, growth, housing, the library, the stadium, anything I'm missing that they didn't touch
no,
on?
They even talked about, like, First Amendment issues, which was kind of mind-blowing to me because the city council doesn't touch on that very often. But it was really interesting that the Boise Neighborhood Associations paired up and invited all these candidates. At first, when we heard about it, we got involved. There were, like, four or five who had committed. All 11 showed up. It was a great 2 hours of giving these people an opportunity. They all got to weigh in under the same time guidelines. And we learned quite a bit. One of the things that I found very interesting was, of the 11 candidates, nobody was outspoken in favor of the stadium and the library. They all expressed concerns. They all talked about concerns they had with the amount of information they received ahead of time, the public, received ahead of time about these projects, and they're all kind of waiting to see how the voters end up handling it. A couple candidates expressed concerns about the legalities and the constitutionality of the measures themselves and what that means down the line. If this is ruled unconstitutional and the voters end up voting yes on these, then you end up with courts throwing them out, and then it seems as though the city of Boise is just trying to ignore what the voters say. So, you know, what's the value in that? So they're all approaching these opportunities to replace two incumbents, possibly even three incumbents if Elaine Clegg were to lose, but kind of cautiously, because they're all trying to learn what those ropes are going to be, which I'd imagine anybody who takes that job for the first time would have to do.
And we should note there, the neighborhood associations are doing a mayoral forum next Thursday, the 17th, with all seven mayoral candidates, and I get the pleasure of moderating that event. So that is on the 17th. Betsy, let's talk about what's going on with the state budget right now.
Sure. JFAC was back in town for the interim meeting, and they got a first look at the state budget requests. And what was interesting to me was that by several key measures, they are really down. The number of line items requested came in at 224. It's typically 400 to 450 different requests. They never fund all of them, but the number was way down. The amount of replacement items that were requested came in at 2.2 million. This year's was 24.6 million. And this is a direct result of Governor Brad Little sending memos out to state agencies saying, whoa, our revenues have not been coming in at the rate we expected this year. I want everyone to really pare things back and be conservative as we look ahead to next year's budget. And the legislators on the Joint Finance Appropriations Committee were very receptive to that and appreciative of that. The totals were still a 6.3% increase in general funds if you added up all the requests, assuming they would fund them all, which they never do. But more than half of that was simply for maintenance requests, which means it's just to maintain what the state is doing right now, with required increases driven by things like more kids showing up at schools, more prisoners being locked up in our state prisons, things that are already required by law for us to cover. So the state is looking ahead to next year's budget with a pretty conservative outlook. And that might actually put the brakes on some of the discussions that we might otherwise see during the upcoming legislative session, with one real big one, the question of whether it is or is not time to eliminate the sales tax on groceries.
You mentioned also prisons, though, because we know we have an overcrowding issue. So what is the latest with prisons and possible redistricting?
So that's an interesting issue. Our Idaho Press reporter, Tommy Simmons, looked into this and found that in the census, prisoners in prisons are counted just like any other resident for purposes of the census. They're people, they live there. But that means those numbers also go into redistricting decisions. So as a result, because all of our state prisons are clustered essentially in one legislative district, in District 22, right here in the Treasure Valley, 12% of the residents of that district are locked up in cells. And so that means that the three legislators, the two representatives and one senator who represent District 22, represent a smaller number of voters than the legislators.
Well, those people can't even vote.
Districts. Right. They cannot vote. Not only that, their home place of residence before they came to prison and once they go back may or may not have been in District 22. And that is just a fact of how the numbers work. And so in that district, the legislators, essentially the rest of the people in that district, have a little bit more of a vote. And because of this has become an issue nationwide, and the census has developed some more information that it's going to supply to states so that they'll know how many prisoners are within various districts in case they want to credit those prisoners to their home counties rather than the place where they are serving their time. Some states are looking at actually taking that data and factoring it into their redistricting decisions. Idaho is not.
Well, what's so interesting with that, too, is that there are prisoners who aren't even, you know, officially from Idaho, right? Or the fact that we have Idaho prisoners in Texas.
Mm-hmm. So, and our Idaho prisoners in Texas count as Texans for the purposes of the census and for the purposes of redistricting. Yet one more incentive for Idaho to get those prisoners back home.
Right. Kevin, pre-K expansion, we've seen it slowly happening. Talk to us about the latest in Boise, but also just trends in early education.
Right. So Boise is expanding its pre-K program to two new elementary schools. Those just started this week. If you recall, this is an expansion of a program that started with support from the city of Boise several years ago. The city put funding into pre-K in two elementary schools in the Vista neighborhood as part of this larger reinvestment plan in the Vista neighborhoods. Now Boise is taking it up as a school district and expanding into two other schools in the district. It's still a scramble. Obviously, this is still a scramble to fund pre-K in any school in the state because, as we've talked about many times, Idaho is one of only four states in the union that does not fund pre-K programs on its own. So you have school districts trying to find their own funding to do pre-K on their own, or they're getting funding from the city, federal government, federal money goes into pre-K in some areas. All at the same time, you're seeing this expansion of all-day kindergarten. More and more districts adopting all-day kindergarten, launching into all-day kindergarten. I talked to two superintendents this week for another project that I'm doing that are just in the beginning of all-day kindergarten, universal all-day kindergarten. Caldwell and Cascade are, among others, expanding into all-day kindergarten because they feel like this is the best way to try to get students up to speed as they're learning to read, as they're going through the beginning progressions of the Idaho Reading Indicator and going towards learning how to read. So it's interesting to me that we're seeing this proliferation of all-day kindergarten programs, which are funded by the state, which, you know, the schools are encouraged to use state funding to provide, and pre-K is still not funded by the state and not encouraged at all by state political leaders.
However, kindergarten is still not, full-day kindergarten is still not a requirement
right.
in the state of Idaho.
Nor is even half-day kindergarten.
Right.
Kindergarten is optional in Idaho.
And for funding purposes, the state has long only provided funding for half-day kindergarten. So even when districts are trying to go to all-day kindergarten, they're having to come up with money in a variety of other ways. A popular way is the state is putting money into literacy programs. And one of the options that is at districts' disposal for using that literacy money is to expand into all-day kindergarten. So you have districts like Caldwell, like CUNA, using that literacy money to expand into all-day kindergarten.
But then what happens potentially with that is, what if a child moves out of a district? So maybe they were in all-day kindergarten in the district they were in, and they move. And because this is not something that is truly funded by the state, you might go to a district where you don't have that option.
And it's not just that. I mean, that's a good point. But also with the literacy funding, one of the things that's interesting about the way the state is distributing the literacy dollars is schools get more money for literacy funding if they have higher numbers of students, higher percentage of students who are not reading at grade level. So when I went to CUNA to get an update on their all-day kindergarten program, I talked to the superintendent, Wendy Johnson, and she said, part of what worries me is if this works, and you do want it to work, right? You do want kids to be reading better. If it works, we get fewer dollars from the state because we have more kids reading at grade level. So we have to figure out a way to sustain all-day kindergarten, and we may have fewer state dollars to do it. So it's a bit of a catch-22.
And then that goes back to funding and JFAC and where we find that money, right?
That's right. 48% of the state's general fund budget goes to K-12 public schools. It is the biggest thing that our state government does.
I want to thank all of you for coming in today. I know we didn't get to everything, but I always appreciate you coming in on Fridays. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Our roundtable today, Mike Sharp with KIVI6 on your side, Kevin Richard with Idaho Ed News, and Betsy Russell with the Idaho Press. This is Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette.